No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules. And at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. Welcome back to another edition of BOA The Revival. Should be an interesting show tonight. I'm really looking forward to it. A guest who I have not spoken to before, which is always a fun experience here on the show, and someone who is a prolific paranormal podcaster and personality in the world of Fortiana. Talking about Ashley Hilt. She's a 14 investigator, filmmaker, podcaster, as I said. She's the host. She really runs the show over at on Wednesdays, We Talk Weird, which is a very popular podcast, and also has a sub-podcast called Beasts and Beyond. And she was telling me earlier that she's got all kinds of plans for this. I don't know, in case that wasn't in the what the fuck? Anyway, so welcome to the show, Ashley Hilt. We're looking forward to chatting with you tonight.
I'm excited to be here. I'm hoping that it is a good time, and I'm just going to warn you now, I'll probably be back. That usually happens, so.
Oh, wow, all right. And you can swear on the show. If you like to swear, you're in good company. And if you don't, that's fine, too. But some people get touchy about it. They're like, I don't want to say that. And that's like, say whatever you want. It's fine.
I was going to ask, but I should have. But, there will be swearing, so hide your kids, cover grandma's ears.
It's
going to be one of them shows.
There you go. So as we traditionally do when we bring on a new guest, give us a little bit of the bio, the background. Who is Ashley Hilt, and how did you get mixed up in all this?
Ooh, that is a loaded question for sure. So as you said, I'm a 40 investigator. I already know people are like, I don't know what that is. That's fine. 40 is just a blanket statement for cryptozoology, ufology, paranormal, the occult, basically anything and everything that's not explained by conventional science. How did I get involved with that? It's a really good question. In 2019, I went to the Mothman Festival in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. I was kind of dragged there by friends. I did not believe in the Mothman or anything to do with it. But I love a gimmick, you know? So I was like, yeah, let's go. I ended up walking away having a multitude of very strange experiences, not just while I was there, kind of leading up to the visit there and then a little bit afterwards. Long story short, eventually life kind of led me on this weird path to where I don't really have a choice but to take on investigating this strange phenomena that was going on in my own life. And, you don't really make money investigating this stuff. Nobody pays you to do it. So how was I going to do it? Well, I was working, I started out, I was making a documentary about the Mothman. That was my thing. And, but I didn't have any social media footprint at all. I actually didn't own a smartphone until 2019. I was a late bloomer there. So I started a podcast because it was easy, and it's something that you can do, you know, right at home with no pants on, you know, nobody knew. And I've been doing it ever since. I think we started, this is almost the anniversary, March 25th, 2020. So 4 years now.
Wow. So that's remarkable. So you, almost everybody that I've talked to over the years, I'm sure there are some exceptions, but like almost everybody in this field kind of like grew up into this stuff. You know, they had an interest, childhood interest or teenage interest, or they had their own experiences. So you say you had some stuff happen in 2019. So up until then, you were just a complete neophyte. You had no interest, just not even interested or involved in the paranormal at all.
So I wouldn't say not at all. So I was very obsessed with cryptozoology growing up, since I was about 11 or so. I loaded up the old dial-up internet and watched the Patterson-Gimlin film after downloading it for like a week. And it blew my mind, And but that's different. Cryptozoology is just undiscovered species of animals, right? It's not
weird.
So when it came to, like, really, you know, woo concepts like the Mothman, I didn't believe in any of that. You know, I've had weird experiences up until that point of my life. It's just that I don't know, denied them. I actually myself saw the Mothman in 2016, did not realize that at the time. I wouldn't have ever admitted it at the time. I did. And it wasn't until I was doing Mothman research, and this was actually 2021, when somebody had relayed an encounter that they had to me, that it just kind of unlocked that memory. They had a very similar experience that I had, and it just, I was like, oh, shit, that's what I saw. It makes sense now. But back in 2016, when I had the experience, I chalked it up to, you know, just anything and everything that I could. I was a huge skeptic. I always have been, you know. Again, cryptozoology is one thing. There are animals out there that we just haven't discovered yet. I can buy that. Anything else beyond that? Yeah, I was like, nah, that doesn't that doesn't click for me until I had. Until I had those experiences in 2019. So,
and what were the experiences in 2019? Can you describe them a little bit?
So I mean, I didn't know it at the time, but I do know it now. I had experienced a weird string of synchronicities. So the circumstances kind of surrounding all of that were already weird. One of my friends had mentioned, so one of my friends is a YouTuber. And she had just now started to do, at that point in time, like, creepy stuff on YouTube, right? Well, she had another YouTuber friend who was actually pretty well known at the time. He had about 250,000 subs.
Oh, wow.
Pretty big YouTuber, yeah. And they had kind of, like, built this friendship online. And she had gotten him involved and said, hey, come, I'll bring you out here. Let's all go to the Mothman Festival together. You can make a video about it. We can collab on a video. And he's like, yeah, great. Well, she thought it would be funny to kind of have me come on to be the quote unquote cryptozoologist, right?
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be, you know, quirky and fun and not serious. So, you know, he comes out. Now, truth be told, just I'll get a little personal for you. I had been chatting with this person online for years and years and years with no expectation to meet each other. And things were kind of, you know, sexy. I'll say that. And so he comes out.
There was a spark there.
We know things are going to get sexy. That's the plan. We're sharing a room, right? We're adults. It's fine. It's whatever. But he comes out, and the type of person that I was at the time, I was not. Well, that person I am in general, I'm not shy at all. I'm very out there and in your face and open. I couldn't, like, look at this person. And I don't think it's so much the person that's significant as it was the events, but, like, I don't know. I couldn't talk to him. It was so weird. I couldn't talk to him. And eventually he's like, you don't like me, do you? And I'm like, no, it's not that. And I said this one phrase. I said, you know what? I don't know what it is about this weekend, but it's going to be big. It's going to be huge. And so we go out, and we're staying at this little Airbnb there in West Virginia. It was about 45 minutes away from the festival. Mm-hmm. We actually didn't end up spending a ton of time at the festival. Like, I think we got in Friday night. We did the museum stuff. Way less crowded if you go in on a Friday night. The festival's not actually happening yet. And, you know, kind of hung out for a bit. We didn't get to the festival Saturday until it was over, like, 6 o'clock.
Oh, wow.
Just because, you know, we spent most of the Friday night drinking at the Airbnb. So.
There you go. All right.
But some of the things that were happening at the time were so significant. And when I say that, it's really hard to explain to people that weren't experiencing them. Saturday morning, I woke up and we had noticed that, you know, we had, like, wood paneling in our Airbnb or whatever. And, like, one of them looked like an owl. Like, you know, that's, people say Mothman looks like an owl. At one point I was outside and there was, like, a crow, and it was like, I don't know, it sounds crazy, but it was trying to get me to follow it. And I did for a little bit until it was like, we were staying in the middle of absolute nowhere, no cell phone service or anything. And I did for a while, and then I was like, I probably shouldn't be wandering out West Virginia. You know, at one point we were at a restaurant, we walk outside, and I stop. Him and I were both smokers, so we both stopped, and he looks down and he goes, oh my God, look down. I'm like, okay, I look down. Right at my foot, there's a dead moth just laying there.
Oh, weird.
You know, we kept kind of joking and we're like, these are signs, right? These are signs of things or signs. And we stopped at a pharmacy. Our friends were driving. They were kind of, so our mutual friends that we had, they were a couple. They were kind of separated from the experiences that him and I were having. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were all driving. Well, the girlfriend, she was like, oh, I got to go to this pharmacy. Takes us to this pharmacy. I get out of the car while she's in the pharmacy to go smoke. And there's like a newspaper stand sitting there. And huge on the side of the newspaper stand, it says signs. The newspaper is called Signs of the Times. And so I was like, oh my God, it's literally a sign. You know, and it was just little stuff like that. And after we got back from that weekend, it didn't stop there. I mean, these just, they kept happening. It was like not surprising anymore with the, yeah. You know, with the, how much this was going on. We were just like, of course, that makes sense. Of course, that makes sense.
Right.
Him and I decided to go ahead and take on this Mothman project together. And we thought that, you know, this is this, we need to tell this story to people. People need to know that this is all weird.
Yeah.
And so we were going to make a feature length documentary out of kind of what was going on and kind of the experiences we were having. And then it just, I don't know, life just continued.
Right.
I won't get too much into it because guess what? I am still actively making a documentary about it. It's a lot more interesting than it sounds because you get to see it.
Right.
But he's not part of the project anymore. That's fine. But life just continued to get weirder and weirder, and I just haven't been able to get away from it ever since. So I'm held hostage by the paranormal.
That's really weird. So like it took hold of you there down in Point Pleasant. Now, what was the thing you saw that you thought was Mothman in 2016, or you think was Mothman?
Sure. So I was staying over at my best friend's house, and we were, you know, full disclosure, we were making pot brownies. That's what we were doing that night. And we ate them, of course. But full disclosure, again, I did that regularly. You know, this was a normal night for us.
Yeah.
We're going to bed. You know, we've already had our night, right? We've had our fun. It's time to go to bed. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm supposed to be sleeping on our couch, and I'm laying there, and I just kind of start, I don't know, freaking out, you know, freaking out. And if you've ever smoked pot or eaten it or whatever it is that you do, you know, sometimes that happens. And while I'm sitting there kind of freaking out, I kind of, when you're really high or you're really drunk or you're really messed up, whatever the case is,
yeah.
One thing that you'll kind of do is like pick a spot in the room to like focus on. Kind of ground yourself. You're like, I'm just really high. It's okay. So I did that. And the spot that I picked was like above, she had this big TV cabinet, catty corner in the room. And I picked right above it in between, you know, the ceiling and the top of the cabinet. And while I'm looking at at this area, something starts happening. Do you remember back in school, Macanunian school, when the teacher would bring out the projector? And they'd have those little see-through plastic sheets that they'd put on so everybody could see. And then they could add layers onto that plastic sheet.
Oh, like the overhead projector, you mean?
Yeah, like the overhead projector at school, right. And it was like that. It was so
weird. We're dating ourselves with this one, but yeah.
Right? Don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
If you don't know, Google it. You know.
Yeah, all the people. All the young people are like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Right. What is that? Like, what is this thing?
Yeah, but I know exactly what you mean. I'm well versed in the overhead projector. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was. It's like that. It's like I'm looking at reality, and something is happening on top of reality. I don't really know how else to explain that. But this thing starts forming. It starts off. It's like a black kind of misty head shape. And then the head kind of, you know, goes down to shoulders. And then at the time, initially, it starts growing out into what I thought were arms. But then the arms start looming over top of the whole ceiling, and then they're coming down also. They're not arms, they're wings. That's when I got up and left the room.
Yeah.
I woke my friend up. I didn't tell her what I had seen because in my brain, I'm just like, look, you're really high. Like, chill out. You know, but I thought I was freaking out. I need you to wake up. Come hang out with me. And she just laughed. Ha, 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 you're so high. Ha, ha, you're fine. But nothing that's ever happened to me before, you know, smoking pot.
I
smoked pot since I was a teenager. I mean, my God, you know, and that doesn't happen when you're smoking pot.
Right, right. Yeah, it's so, very unusual type of thing.
Right. And You know what? Like I said, I just kind of chalked it up to that, explained it away in my brain because whatever was happening wasn't possible and forgot about it. And somebody had told me that they had seen the Mothman in Atlanta, Georgia in 2021, that they had seen it. They were in a hotel room, and first it was like peeking into their window on the third floor, and they could, and then they would like look out and they would see it flying around and stuff. They didn't know what was going on. Now she disclosed to me, well, we did have some gummies, but you know, this, we do this, you know, all the time, you know, like you do it, like I just did, right? I do this all the time. It's fine. And it just kind of unlocked something, because at that point in time, it was so deep in the Mothman research. I'd spoken to so many people, that I kind of noticed this pattern that happens to experiencers after they have the experience. It's not just you see the Mothman one time and then you go on to live your life. It doesn't work that way. It is a very significant and very personal event that happens that just kind of, I don't know if it changes your life. I don't know if it changes the trajectory of your life. I don't know if it was going to happen anyway. And this is kind of a warning as to that change. But yeah, and then everything kind of made a little bit more sense. You know, it kind of clicked. And I mean, now, you know, I've had people be like, well, how do you know it's not a shadow person? How do you know it's not this? I just know. And I don't know how to tell you that I know. I just do.
Yeah. And do you think this Mothman... Well, there's like the classic Mothman, right? And then there's the ones that have been seen around like the Midwest in recent times, which I think everybody, I mean, my idea is that they're not really related. But I mean, what do you think? Do you think this is all one sort of like supernatural entity, for lack of a better term?
I don't know if there's one Mothman or there's multiple Mothmen, or maybe there's some Moth ladies out there. I can't answer that question, but what I can say is that this is not, you know, people think of Mothman, they think of Point Pleasant, they think [S2] Right. [S1] Of the Silver Bridge collapse. That story is not the right story. It's not the correct narrative. And, you know, that's kind of why, it's kind of why I have a job now, is to try to show people that this is a phenomena that's been around forever. It doesn't stop and start and come again and, you know, dances around tragedy. It's always here all the time happening. It's just that I think that the flaps, quote unquote flaps, tend to happen when people have somebody to report their encounters to. It happened in the Ohio River area because John Keel happened to be there and Gray Barker were there and, you know, they were actively investigating it. They had someone to talk to. It's happened in the Chicago area, you know, because they've got, you know, Lon Strickler with Phantoms and Monsters, my co-host Tobias Whalen, you know, that's got people to report these sightings to. So it makes it seem like there's a significant uptick. But I think that the issue is really, it's just really underreported.
All right. Okay. But so you think it's kind of one same through line, though? It's like this is all kind of, you know, all kind of the same thing in a sense?
I do. Yeah. It's the same phenomena happening.
All right, yeah, that's what I mean. What it is, I have no idea. Yeah, it could be, you know, it could be anything. So it's, yeah, I just didn't, that's kind of what I was wondering. So we'll get back into Mothman as we go along, but how I found you in the first place was I saw a post on Facebook for the Frogman Festival, which you were the MC for and a featured speaker. So that was like probably, shit, now like 3 weeks ago or so. And then you talked about frog humanoids around the world. So first of all, tell me a little bit about the Frogman Festival and how this came about. And, you know, this was in Ohio, right?
Loveland, Ohio this year. I believe it was in Mason, Ohio. It's just outside of Loveland. It doesn't matter. I was the MC 2 years in a row now. So I obviously know the guy who runs it. It's Jeff Craig. Jeff Craig is a talented cartographer from Cincinnati, Ohio. He's got two maps that he's made. He's made the map in black and then the hidden Ohio map, both of which are full-size maps of, you know, high strangeness areas, different things that have happened all around, better yet, places that you can go to. So the maps are made for road tripping. Nice. So they're fantastic products. You know, Jeff, he, again, being from Cincinnati, he's not too far from me. We're both kind of, you know, the Loveland, Ohio is both kind of a midway point for both of us. You know, we do have our own monster.
Yeah.
We've got the Loveland Frog. And, you know, he saw this opportunity to jump on it and start an event. And it has been, I mean, it's been going amazing.
Nice.
The support from the general public of people that, you know, probably would have never really, you know, looked in the Frogman or taken these things seriously have just come out in droves. They love it.
Yeah.
They want more, you know. It's been going really, really well. The Frogman is a very weird phenomena, which is also my specialty. The weirder the better.
Yeah.
The Frogman's been seen a couple of times in Loveland itself. So we had a very famous sighting that happened, I believe it was 1955, where there was a businessman who saw three creatures standing around a bridge, wearing cloaks, one of them waving like a wand type thing.
Oh, wow.
And he kind of, you know, obviously didn't stick around too long. He left. It was also followed up with a bunch of UFO sightings that were happening at the time in the area as well. So very weird. And then in 1972, the most well-known, encounter with the Frogman, we had police officer Ray Shockey, was, you know, driving around doing his patrols late at night, and he saw something laying in the middle of the road. He stops, and this thing gets up. It is I think it was like 3 to 5 foot tall. He said it was like a frog-like creature is what he said. It looked more, to him, actually more reptilian, but yeah. It was kind of crouched down like a frog. It got up, walked on two legs, hopped over the guardrail, and went on about its business. Well, a couple of weeks later, it might even been like within like 2 weeks, pretty soon, another one of his colleagues, I can't ever remember his name, another police officer claimed that he saw it too. He shot at it and
oh, wow.
Nothing happened. It just went on about its business. Later, I think this was like 2013. It was pretty recent. That second police officer came forward and said that, it was actually just, you know, he did shoot at it. It was actually just someone's pet iguana missing its tail, and he killed it. And that was the end of it. It was just a story that got out of hand. But you know, we don't really know what to believe. Because the thing is that 1970s small town Ohio, they were being made fun of, you know, and the stigma was still very much alive for this kind weird encounter. So I've actually been desperately trying to get a hold of Ray Shockey, trying to get him to come participate at the Frogman Festival.
Yeah.
And, something completely wild happened while we're there. And he's in his 70s. I mean, he's an old man. I've got his phone number. I've got his address. But I decided to write him a letter. I don't want to impose.
Right.
So I did. I write him a letter, and, you know, I explained to him who I am, what we're doing, invite him to the Frogman Festival. You know, how much did your soul cost, Ray? Come hang out with us, you know?
Yeah.
He never responds. And I'm, you know, kind of disappointed, but okay. At the Frogman Festival this year, at the very end of it, I'm standing around talking to all the cool kids, you know, Jeff Craig and them. And an attendee comes up, and he had found someone's credit card laying on the ground, and he hands it to Jeff. Jeff looks down. He goes, oh, wow. And he just points it at me. And right there it says Lisa Shockey.
Oh, wow.
And when I Google Lisa Shockey, sure enough, there is a relation there. So Ray may have been at the Frogman Festival this year.
Wow.
Interesting. So,
did they get the credit card back to the lady?
I believe so. I don't know. I don't know how that went. I don't know how that played out.
Yeah, then you could find out if, you know, if he went or if that was his daughter or something.
Well,
or I don't know.
I mean, it was hosted at like a convention center. So I believe Jeff left it with the convention center.
Oh, okay. And, that would make sense.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
They were able to come, you know, pick it up. So.
Yeah. And then if you ask them, they're like, we can't disclose that kind of information.
Right.
Why did you ask that? Anyway,
but you know, I'm hoping that maybe he did show up and he saw that, you know, times are different now. You know, as people here that support this and are interested in a story and, you know, just kind of want him to, whether he saw an iguana with that tail or whether he saw a frog humanoid. You know, I did do a presentation on other frog humanoids from around the world.
Right.
This is a phenomenon that happens.
Frog humanoids. Where else have these cases happened? Just Just give me one of your favorites if you want. Just which one stands out that's like, you know, your favorite?
Okay. My favorite happened in Phoenix, Arizona. And while this is still the U.S., it's on the other side of the U.S. There was a lady who was walking to her neighbor's house from her mom's house. And, you know, it's not far, right? It's neighbor's house. And she kind of sees this weird glowing orb in the sky, an orange orb. And she stops and kind of looks at it for a minute. And in the center of the glowing orb is like a dark, it has like a dark center to it. Well, it opens up, the orb opens up and reveals a frog-like creature sitting at a panel. And she looks back at her house. She's like, I should go tell my mom. You know, she's thinking that I should go get her. And the thing starts, as she claims, telepathically speaks to her and tells her, don't tell.
Oh, God, that's creepy.
And she's like, you know, while still contemplating, this thing's still kind of sitting there. The orb is kind of opening up more and more, and it's, you know, telling her, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't tell. Obviously, eventually one day she did tell. It did. After that point, it just kind of faded away. It just kind of left and went on somewhere. But I think that's kind of hilarious.
Yeah, that's wild. That's really strange. It's like the frogman's like driving the orb there or something.
Yeah.
Very odd. Frogman, so shocky. Yeah, interesting. Have you tried to track down this other police officer that came out and debunked the thing? Or have you decided to talk to him, just even if he's even, you know, regardless
of what he has? I haven't yet. You know, I have thought about it. You know, kind of getting a hold of Ray Shockey was kind of a new thing this year. I probably will reach out to the other guy. His name's something Matthews. I can't ever remember. It's out there somewhere.
Right.
But you know, I probably will. Why not? Even if his story is just, it was an iguana.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you wrote the guy a letter, not this guy, but Shockey. So it's like, I feel personally, it's like, if you give it like 6 months, you should be able to call him. It's not easy though. It's not easy cold calling. That's how I used to book a lot of guests for Banal America back in the day, where it was like, I'd have to get their phone number offline because they didn't have an online presence. And then you just got to call them at their house and be like, hey, you want to come?
I will. Yeah, I have no shame. I've done it. you have to.
Just don't show up at his house or anything. That's right. Probably – that's the limit, I think. Once you show up at the house, it's like, all right, now you
– And that's, you know, that's what I've encouraged people. You know, don't harass these people. You know, I reached out to him. It's very easy to check my credentials and who I am and what I do. He didn't want to talk to me, you know, respect that. If he doesn't want to talk about it, that's up to him, you know,
right.
But I gave him my phone number. The offer is always there. If for any reason, Ray Shockey or his family listens to this, reach out to me. Let's talk.
Come on, Shockies, do it. Frogman. Yeah. I'm only vaguely familiar with this story. So yeah, it's interesting. It's cool that I'm sure a lot of these places look at the Mothman Festival and they're like, oh, I wish we had a Mothman. And then, like, this place is like, we do. It's a Frogman. And they're like, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it with the Frogman. Yeah, because I see a lot of these sort of local paranormal lore festivals popping up more and more nowadays. And it's great. I think I saw a thing that came out. I sent it to my buddy, where's his name on here? I sent it to Justin McHenry, who's over in West Virginia, and big Banal of America fan, wrote the book on Lemuria. And I just saw like a thing that came out maybe earlier in the month that was like the list of monster festivals in West Virginia this year. And I think there's like 7 festivals. It's crazy. It's really,
there's a bunch of them now.
They've really gotten on board. I love West Virginia. I visited there a couple of years ago, 2022, and I fell in love with the place. Like, I think it's one of those places I feel like I might end up settling someday. And everybody, like, I'm from New England, Boston. People just like people have such misconceptions about the place, and some correct conceptions. Let's be fair, but it's just fucking magical, man.
It is.
Like, there's a real magical quality to West Virginia that I am. I can't put my finger on. And
you feel it.
As soon as you
enter the state, like your whole demeanor changes. It is.
Yeah.
It's very strange, but it's fun. I say it all the time. It's my home away from home. We were going to buy There's an old rundown theater in Point Pleasant, called the State Theater. And, during the Mothman Festivals, they used to have like the talks and stuff in there.
Right.
We were going to buy it and renovate it. I, was the manager of a movie theater for 5 years. So I was like, we could do this. So you got the whole theater, you got two storefronts right beside it. And then above everything are like apartments, like dwellings.
Oh, if you know what you're doing, that could be a gold mine.
The whole building costs $150,000 because it's West Virginia.
Jesus. Oh, right. Christ. Is this still for sale?
Somebody else snatched it up, and I'm very disappointed because they have done nothing with it. And it's like, and renovating a place like that, if you buy a historical property, you can get grants, and it gets restored at no cost to you. It really is a fantastic purchase if you kind of know what you're doing. And, not just that. I mean, really, we wanted to give back to Point Pleasant. We've harassed those people so much. We're giving them Mothman stuff. we wanted to give them something to do. One time we were talking to some teenagers down there, and they're like, there's just not anything to do here. Like, we have to cross the bridge in Ohio to go to Walmart, and that's what we do. Yeah. There's nothing else. So it really would have been nice to, kind of give them something to look forward to, and maybe open up another monster museum. Who knows? Right down the road there. But, we're waiting. Maybe the person will sell it again once they don't do anything with it, and it'll be back on the market. But, yeah, I mean, we've thought about it.
Yeah, that would be cool. I think I know which place you're talking about, because I think I remember seeing the old-timey-looking movie theater type place.
Yep.
It's funny. You said you went to the festival and you went at the end of the day. Oh, no, you went to the museum the night before, and it was – if people want to go check out West Point Pleasant, and they don't necessarily want to see, they don't necessarily want to do the festival. We went. This was a conscious decision. We went the weekend before the festival.
Smart.
And there was fucking no one there.
Yep.
It was the run of the town, because like anyone in their right mind is like, why wouldn't we just wait and go on the weekend of the festival? Then like we got home and everything, and we saw the coverage of the festival, and it was like, that's insane. Like it's wall to wall people. It's like a 2 hour wait to get up to the statue. And like we were just hanging around the statue all day and walking around and had free run of the town pretty much. So that would be my advice to anybody. If you don't want to deal with the big crowds, some people like the big crowds. We were really debating it, but we were like, let's go the weekend before, because then we're not going to have to deal with too much stuff. And it turned out to be a miracle. It was just amazing time there. Do you know Steve Ward?
Of course. I love that guy.
Right. Steve Ward, he is the man. and that was the other part of it, right? Because Josh Cutchin knows Steve Ward pretty well. I mean, I know him pretty well now, I guess, too, because he spent the day with us and took us around to all the places and shit. And, it was like – and sort of – obviously we were at the museum and kind of showed us around the museum and stuff. So it was like we got a kind of a personalized experience there. I'm not saying Steve Ward will go out to lunch with you folks, but
I don't know. He probably would if you're paying. Probably, he's that kind of guy.
He probably would. He probably would. He's a sweetheart. Point Pleasant, West Virginia. I see it's been, I have a list of some of the stuff from, on Wednesdays we talk weird. So Flatwoods Monster, I assume you've looked at this thing.
Oh, absolutely. So West Virginia was kind of my first, you start with the Mothman and then it just builds.
Right.
But the Flatwoods Monster, of course, is a topic of interest. I mean, I had some early theories. They're very wrong now, but some early theories that, potentially this was tied to the Mothman somehow. I got to speak with, oh my God, I'm blanking on his name. I got to speak with one of the original Flatwoods Monster witnesses.
Wow.
He just passed. It was Freddie May. And that was, an interesting experience. He doesn't claim to know what he saw, but he just kind of describes to you what it is that he saw. And he was just a kid, at the time of this experience. They've got their own museum too. Of course, we've been there. It also has its own festival, ran by the Wild and Weird West Virginia guys, which is, they're fantastic. So, people should go check that out if they can. It is kind of out there, right? So you go down there and you're like, oh, I can hit Point Pleasant and the Flatwoods. Well, you can't. They're about 2 hours away from each other, but it is worth the trek.
I will say, this is my advice. We pulled off the perfect weekend for this. We sweat, all of us, bunch of us from around the country, we flew to Charleston, West Virginia, And in Charleston, it's literally like almost exactly an hour one way is Point Pleasant, and then an hour the other way is Flatwoods. So you can do it in the weekend if you go to Charleston.
You can. Yeah, absolutely. You definitely can. You know, and just even a 2-hour drive in West Virginia is not a big deal. It's very beautiful. Enjoyable. Yeah. It's, you know, very easy to enjoy the ride. You kind of get used to those long drives if you're kind of into chasing down these small town things.
Now, have you been to I love the Flatwoods Museum. It's great. Yeah. It's got that weird quirkiness. Did you, when you went, you may have seen it because it sounds like you kind of got mixed up in this right around, I went in 2022, so you might have been around the same time. They have like a sign on the couch that says like, no seances in this building, please. Did you see that sign?
I don't think so.
Oh, I have a picture of it. I'll send it to you on Facebook afterwards. And I said to the young lady who was working at the desk, I thought it was like a joke. And she's like, no, some people came in and they thought that this was all like of the devil, and they tried to like exercise the museum and lit a couch on fire.
Oh.
And the fire department had to come and everything, and it was like, and so now they have a sign that says no seances in here or whatever. Yeah, for real. It's a crazy, I couldn't even believe it. I'm like, this weird sign, I'm like, holy shit, this story just got even better. Like, wow, I thought you guys were just being smartasses. I love that.
I believe that, though, 100%. That's a true story, I promise. It is.
Oh, I'm sure. When we were there, we tried to, I'm going to assume you had the same fate as I, if you even tried, but when we went, we got as close as we could to the spot.
Oh, yeah.
But you can't, you know, it's in like a neighborhood and everything, and it's private property, and it's West Virginia, and it's like, well, we're not all going to get out of the car and just walk into these people's deep backyard. Yeah, yeah. So I take it you haven't been to the app, you haven't gone to the spot either, because I figured
I haven't been to exactly the spot. No,
right.
You know, because I like my body without additional holes in it, it's my doing. You know, so I've not been there, but I'm very aware of where it is.
Yeah. It's tantalizing because you look over and you're like, oh, it's like somewhere you can kind of see it, but it's like it's really
the spot.
Yeah. It's like I want to stand where the. Because when we went to Point Pleasant, too, that was the cool part. Steve took us down. I'm sure you've been down the trail of the ammo, the bunkers or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And he brought us to, like, where the first sighting happened. It was like, literally, I'm standing where Mothman was. I mean, it's just a mind-blowing experience where you're like, all right, I've heard these stories a million times. But now, here I am, like, literally in the spot that Mothman was. It's crazy. If people want a great... paranormal vacation, go to fucking West Virginia, man. It's
the
awesome.
TNT area, I mean, you can just TNT really area, get lost down there. Those bunkers, being in one of those, it is a strange experience. We've had weird things happen. We went one time, the weirdest thing I've ever had happen down there, because I've been now, I mean, probably 100 times easy. You know, we just go to go anymore. Oh, yeah.
Are you that close? Like, how far away is it from
It's only 2 hours for me. So it's a day trip, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It's real easy. We've been so many times. We got on there one time, and this was like, I mean, it was fall. It was like right at the end of summer, the beginning of fall. And the whole area, that's the thing about the TNT area also. You have to be careful. I have to put that disclaimer up from people. Don't touch the water. It is still a super fun site. There are still active munitions in that area leaking into the ground. So take boots with you if you plan to tread the water, but don't touch it with bare anything. And then, you know, also most of that is private property. And again, it's West Virginia, and they will shoot you.
Yeah.
Back to what I was saying. So we go down there, and it's gray. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like we stepped into a black and white film. Everything is gray.
Yeah. It's very, like,
that's never happened any other time I've been down there. Any other time of year, I've been down there the same time of year. I've never ever seen it completely gray. The leaves were gray. The ground was gray. Everything was gray.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Strange. Okay. It was like. It's like a bomb went off. I mean, which is crazy because sometimes actually they do blow up. They have blown up the bunkers, you know. So, but that hadn't happened recently. It was very odd. I don't know. I can't explain it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird area. Yeah, my impression of it was like it just felt really, it felt like the world, like a world on pause, like time didn't exist or something. It was just like, I don't, like you're in the middle of nowhere, but like in time wise or something. It's hard to explain, but it's very, very odd in a way. But yeah, quite enjoyable. West Virginia, it's yeah, I swear by it, dude.
Check it out. Yeah,
yeah. People should. This has like been like an ad for West Virginia Tourism should be paying us for this show.
Right.
So tell me. So you launched the podcast,
sure.
Coming out of this experience at the festivals. Mm-hmm. What you were saying. And
mostly.
What's,
yeah.
Yeah. And so tell me, like, what is the podcast? I have a list of some of the stuff you talked about. And we'll get into some of the ones I picked out. I was going to, truth be told, folks, to Ashley's credit, I was going to send her the list yesterday because we had to put off the interview and I put the notes together like last week. So I had all the things and she was like, no, I'm good on my toes. So just throw what you got at me. So credit to her because I was like, I can send you the list. I hate to kind of pull things out of people's archive and then have them be like, oh shit, what? Oh no, now I got, you know, but. This will be fun. But anyway, so the show is kind of like you jump into a different topic like every week pretty much?
We do. You know, it's called On Wednesdays We Talk Weird. Right. So weird is a huge blanket term. You know, some of these topics, sometimes are things I've never heard of until I'm researching it that week for the show. You know, but we'll cover, I mean, a whole variety of things. We'll do, you know, cryptids and UFO stories, abductions, conspiracy sometimes. True crime has been one just because I'm passionate about it. We try to do true crime episodes that are extra strange. So like we did one discussing OJ Simpson, and if it wasn't OJ, then who was it? Turns out there are good suspects. We talked about MK Ultra and their potential influence on the Manson family. How some of the witnesses some of the victims of John Wayne Gacy claimed that it wasn't just Gacy, there were multiple people involved. You know, so we usually try to do, you know, something that is a little bit more, it might be known, but kind of a twist on those topics. And of course, you know, my main thing is, it is a comedy show. I'll say that. Don't listen to it with your kids, adults only. But the facts are very important to me. And, you know, when I got into this stuff, I noticed the severe level of bullshit that we face.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of it. So, you know, like we did an episode on the Denver airport, you know, and tons of people think that there's this big conspiracy going on there. And I mean, it turns out it was a big nothing burger. And sometimes that's what it is.
A lot of this stuff turns out to be that way.
It does. It does. And it's unfortunate. However, it makes the stuff that isn't that much more exciting.
Yes, for sure.
I maintain that. And, you know, I say all the time, my show isn't for people that are into these topics. It's for people that aren't. You know, I want people to come and learn and change their mind and get a different perspective, which is why it's also very personal. You know, we have a lot of banter in the beginning of the show. You know, we talk about what we've been doing. I'm a big horror movie fan. I'll usually talk about the horror movies I just watched or the video games I'm playing or whatever. You know, Tobias might talk about his D&D gaming or Kenzie might talk about her cat or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but that's where the comedy aspect comes in as well. I mean, I want to connect with the audience, you know, on a different level. I was tired of the monotone, you know, this scary thing happened one time. I don't want that kind of show. I wanted something that was real and fun and honest. It's probably the best way I can sell it.
Well, yeah, I did notice you have a lot of, well, not a lot, but you touch on quirky stuff, which I like. We did a Michael Jackson death hoax episode, meat eating horses. So it's like we kind of built a lot of the foundation of Banal America on this, like, let's get really fucking weird here and really see what, that's how I wound up, you know, becoming almost an honorary flat earther. It's like, this is, that's a whole other kettle of fish. But yeah, so it's, so you're a big true crime fan?
I am.
Have you following the Delphi case?
Oh, of course. Of course. Wait, I have.
Do you think Richard Allen did it?
I have
serious doubts. I have serious doubts.
I think he did it, but I don't think he was the only one involved. That other guy, I can't think of his name. He's in prison right now for something else.
Keegan Klein?
Yep, I think that he...
That's who it is, yeah. I'm, like, obsessed with this case.
There was, like, the, yeah, there was, like, that weird Snapchat account, I believe.
Yes.
That was him. I think that had both of those men... I don't understand how they know each other, but given their circumstances, I think that they were kind of getting in cahoots. And we've seen killer couples before. It's not like that's out of the norm. I think that they could have gone on to have something else, but I think that, you know, they just kind of parted and went their separate ways, and that's how this came to be, in a way.
Yeah.
That's kind of the short version of
that. All right. Well, you... All right, yeah. There's a whole... Have you heard of the whole Odinist thing?
I have, yeah, and I just think... I feel bad for that guy.
Which guy?
The guy that everybody is saying, oh, it's him.
Well,
I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I think there's something to the Odinist angle, but well, I guess we'll just see. The trial's going to be like in 2 months, so.
Yeah, well, there hasn't really been anything going on lately that I've seen. I've been really more tied up a lot with Gypsy Rose, actually.
Oh God, Gypsy Rose! What? Oh man. I hope you're not a Gypsy Rose. You're not a Gypsy Rose fan, are you?
I don't know how to feel about it. I'll be honest with you. I'm open to both sides. But, man, those are two extremes, let me tell you. As far as the fan base and the hate base goes, it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I felt bad for her until I saw the interrogation video that when the cops took her in, and it was just kind of made me really like, oh, wait a minute. And then the more I looked into it, I feel like she could have escaped at any time, I think. Her brother was actually very sick, like, by the time that they murdered her. And the theory that I've heard is, like, that she was tired of... She was actually now the mother's caretaker. And she was like, I got to get out of this situation.
Yeah.
Because this is all going to fall apart. Yeah. So I don't know. It's an interesting. I think there's a lot more to the story than we've been told by these like miniseries and shit that kind of like sanctify Gypsy Rose and shit. I think it's like
I agree with that. I think all of that did happen, but I think there was still more to it that hasn't been said. You know, I don't really take too much of a hard stance on it. I know that she just got off of social media completely, which is interesting, because she had to, or she was going to go back to jail. So, I don't know. I'd love to hear Nick's side of the story. I would love for him to speak on it one day and hear his part. He never really has, except for that initial interrogation. And I think he did one interview at one point, but he was still very much like... for Gypsy, you know, and felt like he did the right thing. So I would like to hear what time has done to his perspective, you know, and if that story changes at all. But, yeah, I know I've just been, like I said, watching the drama of it all play out. I'm open to hear both sides of the story, but I don't know how to feel about it. I wasn't there, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Really, it's a mystery. It really is still quite
it
a mystery, I think. And we only have the one version, and that's Gypsy Rose's version, really. And it's like I don't know, she seems like a con artist like her mom, so I don't know.
Right.
Now you said you recently posted on Facebook that you call yourself a specialist, Mothman and other peculiar humanoids, the Men in Black. So that's a particularly deep interest of yours, the Men in Black?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and that, of course, started because of the Mothman research.
Right,
during the time that John Keel spent investigating that stuff, he had a lot of alleged encounters with the Men in Black. Witnesses did, too. So, of course, in order to kind of understand that, I've had to dig a little bit deeper. And I'll tell you, the more I've dug into it, the less it makes sense. I'll be honest.
The Men in Black?
The Men in Black, yeah. They're all... different, different in appearance, different in actions. There's no real profile for the Men in Black. And I've actually potentially considered that I had a Men in Black encounter. Maybe not, but it wasn't anything like, you know, there was no Men in Black suits coming and banging down my door. It was actually very normal. I'll tell it, I saw a UFO when I was 18. I was sitting at my mom's house. I was outside smoking, and it was like two headlights in the sky, and that's all I could really make out. But they were obviously together, whatever it was, and it was slow moving, and just the way it moved was weird. I was on Craigslist one day, of all places, don't go there. But I was on Craigslist one day and saw an ad. So I'm in Dayton, Ohio, and we have Wright State University here. It's actually a big film school. And there was an advertisement for a film student at Wright State making a student film about UFOs and was trying to look for people that have had experiences. So I get in contact with that. Hey, I saw a UFO. We set a date. We go to a coffee shop. I meet up with him. He's got a little tape recorder. He just looks like an average. I mean, I can't even tell you what he looks like now. No idea. This was, I'm old. This is years ago. But he just looks like an average college student. And, you know, he asked me some basic questions, went on about his life. The weird part is that years later, and this was probably 3 or 4 years later, and I kind of know this because my husband, I was married at the time, went with me to that little meeting. We weren't together when I was back on Craigslist again. I wasn't doing anything like that, I don't think. But I know we were together.
The UFO guy, where was he from that you were going to talk to?
He was a student at Wright State University.
Okay, all right.
Said.
I'm sorry, yeah.
So he's local. So I get on Craigslist again. I see an advertisement. Hello, I'm a film student at Wright State University making a film, a student film about UFOs for a project, looking for people that have seen UFOs. And it was the exact same advertisement. And, you know, what are the chances that this guy's working on the same school project years later? You know,
right.
it didn't make any sense. I can't say for sure it's a Men in Black. You know, who knows?
Maybe did you contact the guy like and be like, hey, what? I saw your ad again. Is everything going okay with the movie?
I didn't. I felt weird about it. Again, at the time, I was not who I am now, right?
Gotcha.
So I didn't do investigations and stuff. You know, my regular skeptical person. But yeah, you know, it was so strange. You know, he could have just been a UFO enthusiast. Maybe he was making a documentary. Maybe he was a researcher. Maybe this is a cover, you know, for him to get those stories in because it didn't sound so crazy saying that he's a student working on a film. But I'm just going to go ahead and say it's Men in Black.
All right. Fair enough. You don't remember his name or anything? You don't have like
no.
correspondence?
No.
Right? Oh, weird. Men in Black. Yeah. I don't know what to think of them. I don't know. I'm probably more skeptical of Men in Black than anything. Although I guess maybe the idea I that makes any sense. Sort of like these interlopers from another place, in a sense.
I don't think they work for the government.
Like classic. Yeah, exactly. That. Yeah, yeah. Rather than sort of like, oh, there's government people that are running around in black suits. I think that's just kind of like people almost like the Mothman in a way. People kind of like have the one archetype for it. And then if it's really not so much that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, you know, from what I've looked into it, if they exist, and I agree with you, I definitely err on the side of caution as far as skepticism goes. You know, if they exist, they're otherworldly. They're not from here. They don't work for us. They work for whoever, but not us. You know, and it just doesn't make sense. Why are they only contacting a handful of people? And when I say that, some people will kind of give a rebuttal of, well, because the other people they contact are, you know, they stay quiet. They don't talk. That's the point.
Well, they're murdered.
Right. But I saw the Mothman. I've seen it. I've seen UFOs. I have videos of UFOs. I got all kinds of crazy stuff. I've never had the Men in Black knock on my door. I can never be so lucky. You know? I know other people that I trust that are credible that have had weird experiences. They've never seen the Men in Black. You know, why is it some people and not others? You know? So it does. It makes me very skeptical. But who knows? Maybe, you know, they're fucking aliens, right? We don't know what their motives are. We don't have a say in that. So maybe we just don't understand what they are. And there is a method to the madness. We just don't know what it is.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they know what they're doing. It's like, but they can't be bothered to tell us. Like,
right.
we're lowly people. They're doing dimensional or interstellar or inter-something work. They just pass us like in the that's part of their day job. You know what I mean?
Right.
They're
we're
just
ants.
Like,
we're
yeah,
bugs
like, exactly. They're gonna see you like once. They're like, oh, this is the March 21st fucking person I have to talk to, and then I can get on with my alien life.
Right.
So it's like super profound to the people, but to the other, it's just like, ah, it's just another day of being Mothman, you know. It's
sure.
So tell me, I should have checked this back on again, but the mysterious death of Gloria Ramirez, that was the first one that jumped out of me on Wednesdays We Talk.
Yeah, the toxic lady.
Oh, yes. Now I remember this story. Yeah, tell me this story. Tell the people this story, because it's fucking weird. And I never actually, if I heard about it, it was in passing somewhere, but like it barely rang a bell, which was great.
Sure.
Usually when I look at some of these shows, I'm just like, oh, all right, Dyatlov Pass, this, you know, all kinds of stuff that I've already talked about a million times. But this story here with the death of Gloria Ramirez, that really blew my mind. So what happened here?
Yeah, Gloria Ramirez came to an ER in California. You're right. Maybe I should have had some of the list because I don't remember exactly where it was. Yeah, but that's okay. If people want the details, they can go listen to the episode.
Exactly. This is it. It's like a Whitman sampler.
Yeah.
You know. And don't even worry about the details. I fudge details all the time. It's like, sure.
Me too.
Who has time for that?
I get it. But Gloria Ramirez was rushed to the ER one evening. She was having some, you know, heart issues. She couldn't breathe. She rode an ambulance to get there. She shows up. One of the nurses, there's two nurses there, and they are, you know, attempting to, of course, get her back to normal. She is in some type of cardiac arrest. They shock her heart. They're going to draw some blood. And when they drew her blood, something weird happened to the two women that were assisting her. They started getting lightheaded. They started feeling very sick. They actually noticed some weird crystals in her blood, and they thought that was kind of odd.
Weird.
But as they kind of start getting sick and, you know, kind of tag teaming in somebody else, like, hey, something's wrong. You got to come in here. Those people are starting to have the same symptoms. They're starting to get really dizzy. Some people are passing out. And this just kind of continued to happen with everybody that approached this woman who is, you know, she's dying. They actually had to evacuate the ER at the time. They had to take all the patients and everybody out while they attempted to save Gloria. They were unable to. So, of course, the mystery is, you know, what the fuck happens? Why did this happen? There is kind of an official conclusion. The conclusion is that Gloria may have been, so she was diagnosed with cervical cancer a couple of weeks before this happened, and she was potentially using some home remedies, one of which is rubbing this type of topical solution all over herself. And when she did show up to the ER, she did have like an oily sheen to her.
Yeah.
And when they went to shock her heart, when they defibrillated her, that mixed in with the chemicals of the item that she put on herself probably created some type of chemical reaction, you know,
weird.
That made everybody sick. It is weird. Now, the family says that, no, she was absolutely not using that product, but that, again, the family kind of has something to gain there because they were in a lawsuit. They thought that it was the hospital's fault that she was, you know, she wasn't treated proper. She wasn't resuscitated. They couldn't help her. But there's all kinds of theories around it. Some people think that she was given an IV full of drugs that were being trafficked through the hospital. All kinds of weird stuff. Some people speculate radiation, you know, that she was an abductee and had been experimented on by aliens, and this was some type of alien gas, you know, all kinds of weird. But
right.
We talk about it, so.
Interesting. Wow. But as far as we know, she wasn't like she wasn't like someone who was thought she had seen a UFO. There was no paranormal connection. She was just a lady who went in who was sick.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I remember reading about that. It was really weird. I actually really like was excited. I went to the archive today just to get a second look at it. And the episode you put out like this week is like a chimp attack. For some reason, I'm fascinated by chimp attacks. Like, it's probably a...
Tobias is, too, he said on the show. He's a
really?
He's an expert, I guess.
I wouldn't classify myself as an expert. I'll only go so far as enthusiast. I'm a chimp attack enthusiast. Like, I won't go anywhere near a chimp now. I won't even go, like, within 100 yards of a chimp just from the things they do to people. Is this the story of the woman who gave the chimp away, and then they went back for the birthday party, and then it attacked them?
No, and that's very sad that you mentioned that, because it just goes to show how many fucking chimp attacks there are out there.
Oh, yes. Far too many chimp attacks.
This was about the lady. She was on Oprah. The chimp ripped her friend's face off. There's a famous 911 call surrounding it. It goes up Travis the Chimp 911 call. Travis the Chimp. He ripped her friend's face off. Somebody he knew. This was a woman that he was very familiar with. She helped caretake him. So it wasn't like she was a stranger. And it wasn't like it was normal for him. He was a local celebrity. But he ripped her face off. She miraculously somehow survived and has gone on to have multiple facial reconstructions. She had a whole face transplant, everything.
Wow.
And has actually a really positive outlook on life, considering she had her face ripped off by a chimpanzee. So good for her. Good for her.
Yeah, I think, I don't know which way I'd go, but you probably either fucking have a new lease on life where you're like, I survived a chimp attack. I lived through that horrifying experience. Or you're just like, this was so traumatic that I can't continue with life.
Speculate, because she's blind, he ripped her eyes out. I mean, he ripped her entire face off.
They do, the attacks are like nightmarish. They tear and rip at the fucking body and bite fingers off and shit. And it's like the worst. it's like if you're attacked by a super strong toddler. Like, it's just I'm just gonna fucking hurt you with my human-like hands. It's like, Jesus,
you know, we speculate.
Christ.
They're not even, like, trying to kill you. Like, they're doing it on purpose that way. You remember.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they don't just go and kill you, like, and break your neck and you're just immediately dead. No, they're like, no, I'm going to toy with you and really fuck with you. All of these, like surfacey, like, rip your eyes out and shit.
Yep.
Bite your fucking nose off. And, oh, God, gives me the
creeps. So we speculate that she has a good outlook on it because she can't see. She actually
that's pretty good now. That's heartbreaking, but true. That would be really mind-blowing.
She does look pretty good. If you Google her, but she didn't. She went on Oprah. She famously went on Oprah and revealed her face for the first time immediately after the attack, and it was terrible. He ripped her entire jaw off. I mean, they had to reattach. It was crazy.
God.
They had to reattach her jaw. It was an intense situation. So, and it's hard, I'll be honest with you. It's hard to cover a topic like that. That's very, it's serious. It's very serious.
Oh, yeah.
It's very scary. But when you're trying, you're still trying to keep the comedy aspect, because you don't want to be depressing to your listeners, right? You want to keep it kind of lighthearted. And we manage to do so. Man, sometimes even, we cover these shows and we're like, we need a palate cleanser.
I think we both can agree our hearts go out to this woman. It was a horrifying experience. But I just go through life in a way where it's like, if you don't acknowledge the absurdity of the whole situation, like, there's an absurdity to like, this is a fucking chimp attack.
Right.
Like, it's just so bizarre that it bleeds into absurd. It's we got Oprah here involved. So it's like, come on. Now it's interesting. You're kind of like, you're in the lane, like the Mothman-y West Virginia Men in Black lane. I haven't heard you talk at all about Bigfoot. Do you have any interest in Bigfoot? I mean, if you're involved in this, you have to have some interest, but like, what do you think of Bigfoot?
Yeah. Of course I have interest in Bigfoot. Again, I started this because that's what I was into. Because of the Patterson-Gimlin film, and I'm in Ohio.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You mentioned that. Yeah.
We have tons of Bigfoot sightings here. There's actually a particular area that I'd love to go set up some trail cams. I actually have an experiment I'd like to do. It's just that, again, you don't get paid to do this stuff. So you either are footing it, up front and hoping that, eventually people sub to your Patreon and buy your merchandise and it pays for itself, or you don't, I definitely have a strong interest. It gets kind of strange because we have now this divided camp of people between what Bigfoot is. You've got the folks that are like, oh, it's flesh and blood, it's just undiscovered species of ape. You've got the people that are like, oh, it's interdimensional, I saw it come out of a portal. I'm not somebody that's afraid to talk about woo. I like the woo, but the woo is hard to swallow. It's hard to rationalize, because my brand of woo, there is science to it. You know, I know that there's a science to it, and I'm dedicated to trying to find that science. It doesn't make sense to me that Bigfoot is a portal hopping interdimensional creature. But I'm not going to look at these people and tell them they didn't see what they saw, you know? So I kind of tend to, I guess, stay away from it so much. I'm not going to say I'm oversaturated with Bigfoot. I will go research areas. We had one, probably, I think it was in 2022, the beginning of 2022. We had a Bigfoot sighting locally. So of course I hopped in my car and went down there and, you know, tried to check it out. Didn't find anything, you know, I'm no stranger to the woods. You know, I'm always there hoping that something happens. Nothing does. But I'm prepared, you know, if it does, with whatever it is that I need, my little spy kit, if you will. Yeah. But yeah, obviously there's an interest.
Well, it was interesting. I was looking at your Facebook page. You mentioned you had recently posted a picture, from Erie, Pennsylvania, and you put Beach 6 at Presque Island, which is where my favorite UFO Bigfoot encounter took place. What is this encounter? It's a dual UFO Bigfoot case?
Yeah. Actually, this is interesting. It's, I believe, the only instance of Bigfoot showing up in Project Blue Book, which, if for whatever reason you're not familiar, is the U.S. government's case study on UFOs. Presque Isle is just a little island right outside of Erie, Pennsylvania, attached to it. It is a land bridge, so you just drive right onto it. It's right off of Lake Erie. There was a couple driving around there one night. I believe it was two couples and their children. And they had car trouble. And so they pulled over to the side of the road. Well, two police officers patrolling the area see them. I believe this was, maybe it was 1976. No, I think it was 1960 something. I don't remember. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
So the police officers pull up and they're like, "Hey, you guys all right?" And they're like, yeah, we're just, you know, having issues with the car. We're getting it started now and we're, you know, going to be on our way. And they're like, great. Police officers leave. They're patrolling the area again. They see that the car is still there and they come back and everybody is now kind of upset. And they're like, "Hey, what's going on? I thought you guys were leaving." They're like, "Well, we were, but we saw here off in the distance that, something fell out of the sky, you know, some type of fireball craft, whatever, comes falling out of the sky and into the woods. They were going to go check it out."
Yeah.
And so the police officers go, "Okay, we'll go with you." They go with the two men and leave the two women and the kids in the car and lock the car up and they go looking for whatever fell out of the sky. They didn't find what fell out of the sky. So they came back to the vehicle and the women and kids are like devastated. They are very shaken up. They're very upset and they're like, "What's going on?"
Yeah.
They said that, well, a big hairy creature came out and was trying to get into the car.
Wow.
Rocking the car, trying to get into it. They were, you know, honking the horn, trying to get him away. And, you know, so this was, you know, in tandem, some type of object out of the sky plus a Bigfoot came up. Are they related? You know, I don't know, man. Weird shit happens.
Yeah.
Could be.
I mean, the Bigfoot could have seen the UFO too and been like, "I'm going to check out that UFO." And then on the way, he's like, "Oh, I'm going to fuck with these people in this car."
Yeah.
It's like, so, I mean, yeah, it's.
Or maybe he thought they were the UFO, you know, I don't.
Yeah, exactly. He might. Yeah, there's another possibility. Yeah, he might have been like, "Oh, I found the thing that crashed. I'm going to eat the occupants or whatever." Yeah.
Right.
So that's wild. I don't think I've ever heard that story before. That's really
crazy.
Yeah,
they've got a whole like the visitor center there. It all took place on Beach 6. And, you know, there's different beaches labeled along the lake there. But they've got like a visitor center and they've got like a little plaque and everything dedicated to it.
Wow.
So, yeah. But it is a little known story. I agree. More people should know about it. But.
They'll be the next to start a festival. Here we go. Yeah, that would be great. I would go and check that out. That would be cool.
Yeah. Me too.
That's pretty wild. I was really psyched to see you did a show on Toynbee tiles because that's another little quirky thing that I had an interest in for a while until I saw the documentary, and then I shelved it, I guess you could say.
I don't really
do them anymore or have an interest because it's like, okay, that case has kind of been solved, I think.
Right.
But what do you want to tell people about Toynbee tiles? I don't think we've ever even talked about them on the show, but they're
sure.
Awesome.
Yeah, Toynbee tiles are, they're like license plate size tiles. I can't remember what they say. They say some crazy shit on them.
Something about Mars or something. Yeah. Something, yeah. Some kind of weird, like it sounds like a catchphrase. It's like a weird, it's almost like Sounds of Code or something, but
yeah. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But it's got some code on it, but it's English and words that you would know. And they've been dropped all around, mostly in Pennsylvania. But there have been Toynbee titles showing up all over. We actually have one in Cincinnati, and I'm ashamed to admit I've never seen it. I should go see it, but it's like an hour away. It's not that big of a deal. It's just this weird kind of phenomenon that's happening. Somebody was dropping them around everywhere. They couldn't figure out who it was. There was maybe some association with a potential cult, I guess, is probably the best way to put it. Some type of UFO cult, like a religious aspect. Because there was actually a guy who did an interview one time and kind of mentioned similar things that were found within the Toynbee tiles. Could have been him.
Or something, yeah.
Yeah, they kind of, and there were like flyers that would pop up all over, Pennsylvania at the time, that this was happening, and not just Pennsylvania, but wherever the tiles are being seen, and the flyers kind of went in tandem again with the message on the tiles. So, they don't really know exactly. You're right, that documentary came out. They claim that they know exactly who it is.
Right. They came as close to solving it as you probably right. should. Just for people, for the obsessives in the audience, so the tiles it says here on Wikipedia, the general inscriptions, Toynbee idea in movie 2001, resurrect dead on planet Jupiter. That's the catchphrase that is kind of, the movie's called Resurrect Dead. So yeah, resurrect dead on planet Jupiter is the, so that's what it says on these tiles, some variation of that. Toynbee, resurrect dead, Jupiter,
Yeah. And, when we did that episode, I was really surprised to learn how many people have never heard of this. I mean,
it's obscure. It's pretty obscure.
It is. And it really, I'll be honest, it didn't perform well. It didn't perform as well as some of the other episodes. I was surprised by that. I thought that maybe this was a bigger topic, but maybe I'm standing too close to the weird.
yes, but sometimes, I've been doing this for a long time. Sometimes you find stuff that you really like, and it's like, just do the fucking show. You just do it anyway. Yeah. I mean, I did a show with a legendary 1980s pro wrestling jobber, enhancement talent, excuse me, like 3 weeks ago, and like probably like a third of the audience listened to it. I'm like, oh, come on. You're missing out on Cougar J. The life of Cougar J was, I'm already planning on bringing him back for Christmas time.
I know, I tell people all the time, I'm like, this is a really good episode, but of course I have a bias and I get it, but especially if you haven't heard of it, those are the episodes you should be listening to, but you're right. I mean, especially I do a weekly show. We don't take breaks. I do it every single Wednesday. It comes out every Wednesday. And, if one episode doesn't hit, the next one will, and that's fine.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah, Toynbee tiles. They're interesting. For the folks, in the movie, they think they tracked down the guy, and they think that they figured out how he did it.
But they kept his identity anonymous.
Did they? Yeah, all right. I'm trying to remember. Yeah. Yeah. I think they tried to, catch him in the act, but they never could. And It's Resurrect Dead. It's a great movie. It's a fantastic story and weird mystery. I've never seen one myself personally, but it's one of those like bucket list things. Next time I'm in a city that I know there's a Toynbee tile, I need to seek it out because
there's a lot. I had no idea there was one right in Cincinnati. There really are a lot of them.
Oh, nice.
And some of them could be copycats.
I'm sure. Yeah, because online you can find the way to make a Toynbee tile, and I'll be like, this is probably going to be used in court someday. But I thought about making a Toynbee tile right outside my house in the street, but then
that'd
I'm like,
cool.
Well, yeah, I know. But then, but then I was like, oh, well, what the, maybe that's not a great idea. I don't know. So now if a Toynbee tile pops up somewhere in my town, they'll be like, someone will make the connection. But yeah, they're really cool. Toynbee tiles, man. Somehow they presses them, or whoever makes them, presses them into the pavement. It's really, Yeah, there's a whole process to it. It's why.
Yeah.
Dover Demon. You mentioned under your specialties, peculiar humanoids, and I saw on the list Dover Demon. That's pretty close to me. That's went down there to find the spot. It's really, you can't, it's very hard to find. No one, none of my associates could direct me to the spot. So, and I know quite a few people who, Nate Breslin, who had been there,
yeah.
Lauren Coleman. No one seems to know the actual coordinates of the spot. And it's interesting.
That is interesting. I would have thought better. Yeah. Well, I think Lauren would know. I think he investigated it as it was happening, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. He sent me like a sort of dodgy map that was like just with some dots on a road that was published like at the time. He didn't make the map. I don't think he made the map, but maybe, I don't know, but it was like, it was just like a squiggle with like dots, you know, and a couple of things. And it's like, but we went to Dover and, we walked out. It's a dangerous road where it happened. It's like no sidewalk. It's heavy traffic, really twisty. Josh Cutchin and I, we walked up and down the road probably for like half mile in different areas. But it's really hard to find the spot. There's not many identifiers on it. It's crazy.
Yeah. I haven't been to the area, but yeah. It's definitely something that, you know, I've tried to work into my research, because that is definitely the definition of a humanoid, I think.
Yeah, yeah, it's classic humanoid, yeah.
You know, some people, you know, I've heard the theory of baby moose. I don't buy that.
Baby moose. I've never heard baby moose for that. Yeah.
Yep. People have brought up it could have been a baby moose.
Wow.
I just don't think so. I mean, honestly, you know, we have these. I mean, you mentioned Nate Breslin. You know, he did the book on the – he did the Pale Crawlers book.
Yeah.
You know, we have these encounters with these things constantly, you know, to the point it's been turned into a creepypasta, the Rake, you know. It's the same description, basically, just a weird gangly bulbous head, you know, clawed fingers type of humanoid. They kind of remind me of Greys, to be honest with you. You know, gray aliens.
Yeah.
Except they seem to be happening here without the ship, you know, without the craft, without the they don't seem to talk to people, right? They seem very animalistic.
I was going to say, they seem like feral greys.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe they are. Who knows? You know?
Yeah. Maybe they were like greys that got left off the ship. Like they got left behind. Greys that were left behind. And they're like, how am I going to survive here on this, on
right.
this planet?
Figure
and over
it out.
Time, yeah, over time, they just become like animalistic. So
sure,
that would be a great fucking movie right there. That would be.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. This is like two movies. Last time when I had Tobias on, I came up with some kind of Christmas movie. So yeah, I need to get on this. Yeah, the Dover Demon. For people who don't know, it's like this little humanoid. It was, I want to say, almost 30, 40. It's the anniversary either came recently or is coming up. It was in April in Dover, Massachusetts. Little humanoid guy was spotted like kind of scrambling over a rock wall. And it was spotted like by different witnesses at different times, like over the course of like either a few days or within like a couple weeks or something. So that's my super undetailed version of the Dover Demon story. But that's pretty much covers it.
I mean, there's not much else to it. I mean, you can Google it, Google Dover Demon, you'll see the sketch. That's what it looks like.
Now, you did a show on the Amish?
We did do a show about the Amish, yes.
Nice. You might be the only other paranormal podcast that's done an Amish show. I did an Amish show, like, years and years ago.
Nice.
On Rumspringa, back before all the reality shows came out. That was kind of like, yeah, man, I was like, what is this? I'd heard about Rumspringa and had a guest on who wrote a book on it. And then all of a sudden, like two or three or four years later, it was like all these Amish Rumspringa shows. And I'm like, oh,
blowing
shit.
Up everywhere.
I should have invested in Rumspringa. But what was your Amish exploration?
So actually that episode we did have a guest on. It is my good friend Cassie. I love her. I have no idea how to say her last name. I'll be honest with you. Cassie is another Ohioan. She is a cryptid artist. She makes fantastic pieces of artwork. She lives in like Amish country. And so she's always kind of, you know, we're kind of, you know, chit-chatting as friends, going back and forth. She works at a local pizza place. She'll kind of bitch about the Amish.
Oh.
So,
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. I part of me loves the Amish, but there's a part of me that's like, no, you probably should hate the Amish. Like,
see,
I don't, because they're so closed off. Like, there's probably a lot of shit going on within that Amish
there
world
is.
That you don't want to, you know. I see them as like these lovable, but it's like, no, they're not like that at all.
No, they're not probably. At all. But, you know, she comes on and she kind of explains. She had done a like a artistic rendition. It was like Amish Bigfoot. And then she's, I believe, I don't know if she's done it yet or she just intends to. She's going to do a whole Amish Bigfoot family. You know, but, you know, we kind of had the idea. Come on, let's talk about the Amish. Come on the show. You know, of course, it's mostly an excuse to sell her, right? I want people to support her. She does great things. But I also thought it would be interesting. I don't know anything about the Amish, you know. I learned a lot. And, you know, she comes on and she kind of teaches us about, you know, there are different, the different tiers, I guess, for lack of a better term, there's different type of Amish. You know, she teaches us about the dirt. She gives us the tea, you know, how they all have cell phones. She had actually, back when there was like...
Oh, like secret, like secret cell phones,
Secret cell phones, and, you know, they're always doing stuff that they shouldn't be. Apparently, they really struggle with drug abuse a lot, and that's not really talked about. Yeah, it's really interesting.
That's
they have, like, their own rehab centers and things like that. So, I mean, she really gets into, like, the, like I said, things you don't normally, you're not going to pick up on Google from the Amish, which was really interesting. When there was, like, a statewide emergency test that was done on everybody's cell phones, I think, last year?
Yeah, no, it was a national test. It got everybody, all the conspiracy people were.
Right.
Everybody
was freaking out.
And, like, a whole bunch of Amish people got busted.
Got caught with their phones, yeah.
Yeah.
So we were talking, you know, we didn't talk about that on the episode. The episode happened before that happened. But, yeah, she, of course, messages me and, like, guess what happened?
You know? Yeah, I wrote about that for Coast to Coast, yeah. That was a great story. That was like, that's like, you couldn't even, that was like comedy writing. It was like, if this happened in a movie, I'd be like, oh yeah, right, kind of thing. But
right.
Like, life just really, yeah.
And
now, what
punishment? Like, when you get caught with stuff like that, like, you're in trouble. You're kind of ostracized for a while. You're not allowed in the community, which means that you're homeless for a time period. I mean, it's pretty crazy. And she goes into that kind of stuff on the show.
Yeah. I think the people, they were like shunned. It's called shunning. And they were like, they were pretty much cast out of the community for, I don't know, it can last a very long time. Like, they have to, like, work their way back in and shit. It's crazy.
Right.
That's the kind of thing, like, I'll be honest, though. It's same with cults in a way, but I'm lucky I dodged that bullet. But it's like, those are the kind of things, like, if I could just go live with the Amish for, like a 6 months to a year, I think I would enjoy that experience. Somebody actually wrote a book. They did that, but they with Mennonites or something, or one of the other similar Quakers. I don't know, folks. I'm doing the best I can here, but yeah, that's. but somebody wrote a book on that experience. I should dig up that person's info. But I think that would be fun to dip out of society for a while, although the rules are so strict that would be the real challenge of it all.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I suppose, I mean, you know, I like to drink, I like to smoke my weed, like to have sex, you know. I can't imagine getting rid of those basics. I mean, let alone you're talking internet and TV and all the vices that we have.
Be intense.
You know, it would.
Yeah.
I think I'd last maybe 3 days, and then I'd be like, I gotta go.
Well, plus the other part is, like, there's no fucking way they'd let you just come and hang out anyway. So it's
right.
You know what I mean? They'd be like, but no, get the fuck out of here. Like, you can't just buy a house in the Amish village or whatever.
Right.
Like, you know. Well, that would be cool. Smiley face killers. What do you think of that whole thing? I'm skeptical of it myself, but I've been
I'm skeptical too. So at the time, I know I mentioned to you before we started recording, I just recently got new co-hosts for the podcast. Prior to that, my co-host was Pato, a guy from Chicago. So you know, that whole thing was very close to him.
Yeah, this was like, this is a deep cut from your archive. So.
Right. That's an older one. You know, it's been interesting to follow because, you know, at first when we bring it up, I'm also very skeptical. I'm like, I don't know. I'm not sure You know, if I buy that all these murders are tied together, you know, being somebody that's into true crime, if people don't know what's happening, a bunch of young men are disappearing from Chicago bars and being found washed up in the waterways. Sometimes people find smiley faces either in graffiti or somewhere around their body. So some people seem to think that this is either a serial killer or maybe even a group of killers. You know, who knows? We don't know. The official stance from Chicago PD is that these are just young men that are getting drunk and falling into the water. And, you know, let me tell you, that shit does happen. You know, it does.
I think it happened just now with that kid in Nashville. I don't know if you've
told exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, exactly.
As soon as I heard the story, I'm like, oh, man, he's super drunk. Like, showed the video. He's, like, stumbling around. I'm like, yeah, he probably fell in the river there.
Yep. That's it. Yep, and, you know, that happens a lot. As the years have gone on, because you're right, that is an older episode, people have brought to my attention other similar incidences that are happening in different areas. Like, I think there's one happening in Florida, and there's some people that seem to think that they're connected to these murders happening in Chicago, or potential murders happening in Chicago. I don't know. I don't know if I buy that. I mean, the autopsies all seem to show that these people drowned. So, you know, until there is concrete evidence that somebody is drowning them or causing physical harm to them in some type of way, I mean, it's a mystery, I suppose, still, if you want to call it that. There's nothing wrong with speculating about what it is, but I don't think, you know, Occam's razor. Sometimes it's just people getting drunk and drowning.
Right. And there happens to be smiley faces, like, nearby. It's not,
We're in Chicago. There's graffiti everywhere, you know?
Right. It's kind of like... Yeah, you would think that they would change up their thing anyway. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like, all right, it's not super – if it was like one word or so, you know what I mean? If it was like something a little more unique than a smiley face, I'd be more like, oh, that's interesting. But it's like – and at first it was. I was like, oh, that is interesting. Then you kind of look more into it and you're like, all right, this kind of mathematically just doesn't really – like it seems like a law of averages kind of thing. Young men get drunk and fall in rivers all the fucking time.
It happens all the time.
In major cities, like, all over the world. Like I said, this is something going on in Nashville right now. This kid's missing, and it's almost certainly what happened to him.
It just happened here. A 16-year-old girl went missing, and she was missing for about a month before they finally found her body. But, you know, people were, of course, speculating. She was murdered. She's abducted. She's alive somewhere. She's trafficked. No, they found her body. She probably was... walking over a bridge to go home. She was drunk. She fell into the water. There's no lights out there for you to see to recover. She drowned. It happens.
Yeah.
It's sad, but it happens.
Yeah. Don't go anywhere alone, folks, if you're really drunk. That's, you know.
Stay where you are.
I'm an old seasoned drinker, and I can tell you that is one of the top 10 rules, I think. Top 5. Especially if you're, like, in a city or something. You don't want to.
Absolutely.
Go anywhere alone.
Yep. I agree.
I had a, I can't even tell the story on the show, but yeah, I'll allude to it. I had a run-in with two meth heads at like 3 a.m. in fucking West Virginia, but somehow I got out of the situation deftly. Maybe that's why I still think West Virginia is a magical place. It's like, I really narrowly avoided what could have been really disastrous.
I don't go to West Virginia alone. I can say that. I love it there, but there is a problem happening.
So. This was like the patio of the hotel too. The hotel was like a gas. I'm like, I don't know. They just walked through the thing. It's like, what the hell? crazy. Furries. This is another one deep in your archive. You did a show on furries. These are interesting characters. They're just an odd bunch of people. What did you? But your episode. Kind of like tried to add some dimension to the furries. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one thing about our show, we're a very sex positive show in general. We don't really kink shame unless there's not consent involved. You know, that is one thing about me and my personality in general that everybody knows. I'm very hypersexual and I'm not afraid to talk about it. We actually hooked up with anybody in that way.
yeah, yeah. The way you set that up was...
yeah, right.
You have no one to blame but yourself for that one.
I know, right? Now everybody's going to think I hooked up with a furry. Not yet. Maybe one day. But anyway, we connected with a gentleman. His name is Chris. He runs the Conspire a Theory podcast. Actually, really good show. Check
Theory.
Yeah, Conspire a Theory. Check him out. He draws eyewitness encounters, mostly... alien encounters and stuff. Yeah, he's an artist. I'm actually partnered with him right now. We're working on, well, he's working on a comic book that is, he draws out different people's real life encounters with the paranormal and has asked me to, you know, kind of help him proofread and stuff like that. It's called Twilight Sentinel, I think. Yes. Anyway, he had asked Pato, he listens to the show. He asked Pato and I both, you know, separately to come on a show, talk about, you know, ourselves. He discloses down the line that he's a furry and that he is, you know, willing to come on and talk about that. And we thought it would be great, you know?
If someone was like, I'm a furry, I'd be like, well, you're also the next guest on Banal of America. So that's
right.
Even...
Come on the show. Let's hear your story, you know?
Yeah.
Because it definitely fits that weird umbrella, right? I mean, you know, let's hear it from the furry's perspective. I myself, I'm not a furry. Well, he says that I'm an honorary furry now, which is great. He's drawn me as a furry. Yeah, they look great. I'm like, maybe I should get into this. You know, I don't understand it. I never have. And I feel like a lot of people feel that way. And that's why they're really shit on all over the internet, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So let's have someone come on and talk about it. And he does. And, you know, of course, he talks about, you know, why people do it, how they kind of get there, and how it can be sexual, how it cannot be sexual, how it's therapeutic, how the community is set up. You know, it is a very interesting perspective. I was actually listening to a different podcast one day, and they had started talking about furries, and one of the people chimed in. They're like, oh, you know, somebody did a show on furries, and it was my show. And I thought that was really cool. So
furries. Yeah. They're an interesting bunch. Yeah,
they are.
That inspired me to, I should look into furries.
I mean, who doesn't love a cat girl? You know what I mean? We all do.
For sure. Yeah.
You know, and that's just kind of, I mean, all you're doing.
Well,
you're
just a really weird subculture. It's a great, you know, and it's a, no, like, literally and figuratively, it's a very colorful subculture. So,
it is.
You know.
Yeah. And expensive. Let me tell you, he was talking about how much those suits cost, and they're pricey. And, man, they've gotten really good at them.
What's that?
They're getting really good at making those
things. Oh, yeah. They're elaborate. They're insane.
Works of art, you know?
Yeah. And I assume they have all kinds of tricks and shit for wearing the suit. They probably wear a diaper, right? They got it, right? How else could you get out? You can't get out of the furry outfit, so.
Yeah. You would think.
Yeah. Well, that would be, if you get the furry guy back on, ask him that.
I will.
or if I ever get around to doing a furry show. That'll be like question number one.
Well,
like,
bring him
right.
on, you know, go, yeah, reach out yeah. to him, bring him, he'll come on and talk about it with you.
I'll check it out, I'll find out, I just have in my notes furries, so I'll have to go back and,
sure.
And find that, but yeah, for sure, I will, I should look into that. Organ trafficking, so you did a show on organ trafficking, this is based, I assume, kind of on the old urban legend about waking up in the hotel room with the ice and all that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and just kind of deep diving into it. Is there anything to it? You know, is this real?
Yeah.
And that was a very eye-opening episode because it turns out it is real.
So, really?
That was very scary. As a matter of fact, at the time that we recorded that episode, there were charges being brought up in China because they were organ trafficking some prisoners that they had there. And it's kind of a big thing. I'm not sure what the outcome ever was of it, but obviously it's news that didn't really be, you know, wasn't really made here. You know, but come to find out, I mean, this is just something that they do, you know, in different countries. It happens a lot. But yeah, there was actually some truth to organ trafficking, and not to mention, you know, there is a demand for these organs, a huge demand
for sure.
Them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, there is, you know, are people waking up in ice baths in hotel rooms? We didn't really find anything in that regard.
Right. Yeah.
But it is a thing. It does happen.
Yeah. It's scary in a way.
Yeah.
I envision a sick future here in this country where they'll come up with some way to fucking make use of prisoners' organs. They use them. They use those poor prisoners. They work them to the bone anyway. So
absolutely, yeah. You know, all kinds of stuff. And not
commodify
even just that,
them.
I mean,
commodify
organ
them.
Trafficking can be consensual. You can, you know, let you can agree to have someone, you know, purchase one of your organs from you.
But really?
It's not necessarily legal. But people, you know, people will do it. And then they'll travel to a different country outside of America. They'll perform the surgery. You get your money and they get their organ.
Yeah, that makes sense. If I was like a super billionaire and I needed like a new kidney or whatever, yeah, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to be, you know, who wants to come to Dubai with me and give me their kidney?
Yeah.
Shit. And false confessions. That's the other one I had in the list here. False confessions. What do you, this happens way more often than people think.
It does. It does. We talked a lot about different types of interrogation techniques that people use. You know, that's why, you know, they say here, it sounds extreme on social media, but they tell you all the time, the police aren't your friends. They're not. You know, their job is to secure a conviction. And sometimes they are willing to do that by any means necessary because they have a lot of backlash if they don't. If you look at, you know, cases like cold cases and things like that, the detectives that work on those cases, I mean, people hate them, you know, families of the missing hate them, you know, families of the dead, they hate them because they rely on them to solve these cases. There's a lot of pressure surrounding that job. It's not necessarily because they're bad people, you know, I'm not going to be like old detectives, you know, ACAB or anything. But their jobs kind of can make them do bad things, you know, and it does. It happens far more often than people realize. And, you know, one thing that's, of course, a huge case we had brought up, we touched on a little bit, was the making a murderer case. And specifically,
the kid,
yeah, the nephew, Brandon Dassey, and how, you know, that was it blows my fucking mind that he's still in jail because of the way that they went about interrogating him and how that went is just insane.
Yeah, that's a sad story. That's a really when people see that interrogation, that should immediately like at least give him another trial or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of messed up.
I mean, he could tell them a story and he would be able to go to WrestleMania afterwards. You know, he had no idea. He had no clue.
Yeah. That's the saddest part of this. That's the saddest part of the thing where he's like, he's like, does this mean I can't watch WrestleMania on Sunday?
Right.
And they're like, dude, you're going to jail. Like you're not leaving this. Yeah. That's terrifying. Yeah. General. Oh man, so do you have a particular favorite show that you've done over the years on Wednesdays We Talk Weird?
That's a good question. I have a lot of favorites. It just depends on what it is at the time. Men in Black, of course, was a really fun deep dive. You know, of course, we get into the history and kind of where the climate is today. You know, some social commentary as to why the Men in Black may be so different. Injured Cold, that's another one that's near and dear to my heart. That is a personal case that I work on, have been actively working on since I've started. You know, both parts, the first part, we kind of go over the story of Injured, you know, who he is, how he came to be. And then, of course, the second part, I had Tanya Derenberger herself on to do an interview. She ended up being a really great friend of mine at the end of things. You know, that's really interesting. I don't know. Like I said, it just depends on what mood I'm in at the time.
Right. How about this? Let me reframe the question. You're speaking to an audience, different podcast audience. So if there was one episode besides like the latest episode, right? Like that's, I suppose if somebody asked me this question, I'd be like, just listen to the latest episode. But if you want someone to check out the show, which one would you say? Oh, go listen to this one. This one's going to blow your mind.
That's a really hard question.
All right.
I mean, I would say probably Injured Cold. I think that that itches the scratch for a lot of people.
Right.
You know,
it sounds like that's your favorite. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, go check it out. It's really well researched because this wasn't something that I just researched in a week.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that I've researched a lot. Or on the flip side of that, if you want a classic, Mel's Hole, go check out Mel's Hole. That is a fantastic Art Bell classic.
Sure is.
You know, that one's a really fun one.
Now, Tanya Derringer, this is the daughter of Woody Derringer?
It is, yep. She is okay. The daughter of Woodrow, who had the lifelong friendship with Indrid. She goes on to maintain that friendship with Indrid her whole life. She was 4 years old when this all started.
And she passed away, right, recently?
She did, May of 2023.
It's too bad.
So, very, very, it is. She, when I met Tanya, she was, I mean, already not in good shape. She had MS. You know, so she was in and out of the hospital, sick all the time, you know, things like that. So she was already kind of there.
Right.
I'm just grateful, you know, to have been able to have made contact when I did.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, the unfortunate part about kind of facing that mortality with Tanya is that, you know, she dies. Well, so does an Indrid. You know, so doesn't that story. And I didn't want that to happen. So, I mean, I made sure to try to, I'm not going to say milk it because that sounds terrible, but, you know, get as much as I can, gather as much as I can. And most importantly, if Indrid's real, if he is a real character, he's a real person, then that's the only way I could make contact is through Tanya. And I was not able to, but that doesn't mean that I have given up, because I certainly haven't. I still got some things that I'm trying out to try to make that happen. It's horrifying to me, I'll be honest with you. You know, when you really sit back. Oh, go ahead.
No, just what were the, were there like rules of engagement in a sense? Like, could you have asked Tanya, like, hey, can I meet Indrid? Or was it like you, that wasn't, she would, couldn't do it or wouldn't do it?
So, yeah, I mean, it was definitely on the table. It was definitely in the plans. You know, she says Indrid knew who I was. You know, we've had those conversations. I could ask her a question. She could relay it to Indrid the next time she sees him, relay it back to me.
Right.
Things like that. It's just that, unfortunately, like I said, Tanya, when we met, she was in and out of hospital.
Yeah.
It was during COVID, you know.
We
didn't want to put her at a bunch of risk. Now, I was able to physically meet her in person. That did happen. Unfortunately, it was only the one time. So it, but it was, you know, had always been in the plans. At one point she had invited me to come stay at her house, and I'm like, great, awesome, let's do this. But then she, I mean, immediately was admitted to the hospital, and she'd be in there for weeks, you know, weeks at a time. Yeah. So it was tough, but she was immobile. I mean, she was wheelchair bound, couldn't move.
Right. I knew she was in bad shape there. Yeah.
You know, I think that I probably got one of the last signed copies of her book, because I just think that she physically couldn't do it anymore. But yeah, but again, like I said, it was always there. It was always in the works, you know. I didn't expect to really form a big friendship with this woman, but, you know, I did, so.
Yeah, well, that's great. Do you think that this Indrid is a real, like a real person, or do you think it's supernatural in nature, or do you think maybe it was just like a really great story?
You know, I have gone back and forth with this for years.
I don't expect you to be like, it's case closed. It's, you know, but when you're, you know, that's kind of the base, the general, those are the options, I think, right?
So, yeah. So, I mean, so, you know, when I go back, and my initial thoughts, the very first time I ever heard about this story, I thought it was all bullshit, right? Obviously, that's way too much, right? So you got too much going on there. You're telling me you've been to this guy's planet and everything. Like, that's ridiculous. And then something would happen. I mean, something crazy would happen that would just throw me off. So initially it was like the original Indrid story with Woody and kind of how that played out, and how, like, you know, he's on this other planet with them. They're all Christians. Like, that was a big, I was like, no way.
It's kind of hard to believe. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, all this weird stuff. And then, but then there's reports from the psychologist who, you know, actually evaluated Woodrow and said, he's completely sane. And I know Indrid's real, not because of him, but because I talked to Indrid myself. And, you know,
wait, the psychologist said this?
He sure did.
Oh, wow.
Said that he talked to Indrid, and not just talked to him, he spoke with him telepathically. And,
oh, jeez,
you know,
I hadn't dug that deep into the story. Yeah. Wow.
Right. And this is a man putting his whole career on the line.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like, well, why would that guy lie? For what? You don't make money being an experiencer. Like, you really don't. Even in book
sales. Especially like back then.
Exactly. He did get to travel around and talk about his experiences. But again, there's no money in it. Right. There's nothing fantastic there. Maybe partial local celebrity, but they were tortured. They had people, they had just regular people at their house 24/7 trying to catch a glimpse of this man, of this mystery yeah. man. And some people claim that they have, you know, so then that would happen. Well, then, you know, later on, I'd entertain the idea. Well, Tanya says that, you know, she talks to Injured now. Is it mental illness? Is that, does that run in the family? Turns out Tanya's adopted. She's not even Woodrow's blood daughter.
Oh, wow.
You know, so it's like, okay, well, there's not that. But then it, we go back and see his obituary, Woodrow's obituary. Tanya's not listed there. Okay. So
weird.
Did she lie? Does she not know him at all? Is this completely made up? Well, no. If you go back with records, you see where her mother and him were married. So she was there during that time. So it's been a lot of back and forth of me trying to debunk this desperately because as an investigator, that's what I do. I'm going to try to come up with a logical explanation before anything else. But it just continues to get deeper and deeper. And, you know, eventually I'd actually been in contact with one of Tanya's kids. Tanya had a very interesting life in general. She was kind of estranged from her children, not going to put all their business out there. Yeah. But Tanya had kind of disappeared for a while. And one of her daughters had actually reached out to me and let me know she was in the hospital, you know, things like that.
Right,
and
right.
We kind of got to talking and she's like, you know, how do you know my mom? And I'm like, well, you know, why is a 30-year-old something, you know, from Ohio know my mom? You know,
you're like, have you heard of Injured Cold?
Well, yeah. And I tell her, I'm like, well, because the injured stuff, this is who I am. This is blah, blah, blah. And, she, you know, at this time, she's talking about her mom and she's like warning me. She's like, stay away from her. She's a big scammer. She uses people. She does this. I mean, she's really going in on this woman and talking a bunch of shit about her. And I'm like, okay. Here it is. I'm going to mention Indrid, and she's going to be like, no, it's a grift. It's fake. You know, just don't talk to her. I do mention Indrid, and she's just like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. Like, so she didn't take that opportunity to say it didn't happen. Now, she did say she's never met Indrid, but, you know, she confirmed this has just been something that's been part of their lives. And so I haven't had a chance to really sit down with the children and talk to them in detail. I want to.
Yeah.
But, you know, since she passed and everything, it was inconsiderate of me to do so. So I've been waiting.
Right, right.
You know, so I don't know. You know, I have tried everything that I could possibly think of to disprove that this is a thing, but I just can't. I can't.
Right.
So I don't have a choice but to think that there is something to this.
Did Tanya ever explain, or was maybe it was explained in the book or a book somewhere, how Injured, in a sense, got passed down from Woody to her?
So it's just because when Woodrow and Injured met, like I said, Tanya was very young. She was 4 at the time. She's got 2 brothers. And, you know, when they had met, they had kicked off this friendship. And I don't know why. I don't know if they just hit it off. I don't know what interested Injured in pursuing this friendship. But it was very much like hanging out with your buddy. Indrid would come over. He'd bring his family over. They'd have fucking barbecues and shit outside. And Tanya would play with his kids. He's got kids. He's got 2 boys and a girl also. Yep. And, you know, they would all hang out and roast weenies in the fire or whatever. He just became like her uncle. And so, of course, when Woodrow dies, you know, she is going to continue that friendship
with
this man she's known her entire life. And they live, you know, twice as long as we do. Indrid right now is in his 90s and he's middle-aged. So that's the explanation there. I mean, so he's had to watch, you know, he's had to kind of watch her go too.
Well, Indrid, it would be interesting if he pops up somewhere and someone in the kids' lives or something like that. You know, or contacts you or something. If this is a real story, like one would think that he needs to continue, but maybe he doesn't. Maybe, maybe he's cool with having human friends.
Yeah. So. I mean, I've got plans. You know, I have things that I'm going to try. I am going to attempt to contact Indrid, probably until the day that I die. But I do have things that I would like to experiment with. I do intend on talking to the family a little bit more. I actually have Tanya's unfinished book And I want to give the family the opportunity to put it out there, and I'm more than happy to help them put it out there, but it's not mine. It's theirs. You know, even though I have it, it doesn't belong to me. And
right,
so
right. Yeah.
I want to speak with them and kind of see, gauge how they feel about it, what they want to do going forward. It's just, I've been waiting to make that connection to them, with respect to what they've been dealing with. But, you know, hopefully something happens. Like you said, he could try to contact them. He could say fuck Earth and never do it again. Now he has lost two people that he was very close with.
Right. Exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah.
He might be maybe like, he doesn't want to keep watching us die, you know?
Exactly. Now, when was the last time that, he purportedly came to visit this, the daughter there? You know, when was the last time she saw him in the flesh, if you will?
I guess I wouldn't have that information. It was okay. I hadn't talked to Tanya in a couple of months before her death, because she was in really bad shape. So I can't even pretend to know. But she had visited with him during the time that her and I had talked within
okay,
the few
yeah,
years.
All right. So it was frequent enough that, yeah, okay. So it wasn't like he just showed up like every 5 years or something like that.
No.
It was like, yeah. Okay.
Pretty regular.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at. So interesting. You joked earlier that you're building this empire. So you have Beasts and Beyond is a sub podcast or spinoff, let's say, of on Wednesdays We Talk Weird.
It is. Yeah. Beasts and Beyond is basically where we take different creatures, and we kind of pick them apart a little bit. And sometimes those creatures are, you know, real, sometimes, you know, with alleged real encounters. Sometimes they're folklore. We did something a little bit different. We picked apart the creeper from Jeepers Creepers. So sometimes they're entirely fictional. Just kind of a fun way to really hyper-focus. You know, like I said, with the Wednesday show, we do have a lot of banter. We do a news segment at the beginning of each episode. None of that's in there, you know? So this is basically those stories with all that extra in it, you know, like without the trim.
Contained.
Yeah. Yep.
Nice. This is with Tobias?
This is not with Tobias.
Okay. So
I have a bunch of people that I co-host these shows with, but they get an episode per season. But some very interesting folks. Jeremy from Infinite Rabbit Hole Podcast is one of them. There's also Flood from XV Planis. You guys got to check that guy out if you don't know who he is. That's another
Flood.
Flood, yep, from XV Planis Podcast. He's got a whole series that he's doing right now on the basically Skinwalker Ranch area. He went there last year, had some really crazy experiences.
Nice. Is Flood his real name, or is that like his? Okay, all right.
No.
And is it spelled out like the word Flood?
Like the word Flood, yeah.
Interesting.
Yep.
I find that intriguing.
Yep, he's one of them. Some people are new. Some people have never done a podcast before, you know, and they just kind of want an opportunity, and I have a place where people listen. You know, why not give them that chance? I wanted to build a little weird family, and I did. And I want to showcase these people and all their talents. So
nice.
That is one show. I do have two new shows coming out. The Wednesday show is every Wednesday. You guys will always get that. But then you'll also get a bonus episode every week, which is in these new shows.
That sounds like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. Not going to lie. It's a ton of work. But I'm recording it. The Wednesday show I have to record every week. These shows are being recorded and backlogged as seasons. So it's a little bit easier because I don't have to commit.
That's a really good way of doing it.
Yeah. And so I release the episodes as a full season, and then I can kind of take a break during that time. So the next show that is coming out, Beasts and Beyond, is actually getting ready to end. Not in forever, just it's the final episode of the season. And we are switching over to Fringes of Reality, which is an experiencer show. People that aren't me and my co-hosts come on and share their stories of the strange and unusual. And let me tell you, we've got some fantastic, fantastic people sharing all kinds of interesting stories. You know, we have one girl who talks about this reoccurring dream that she has where her dead grandmother appears in it, whom she's never met. We've got one guy who tells the tale of this creepy clown doll that was in his house as a kid. They still own it, where him and his friends would watch this thing move around on its own constantly.
Oh, God.
got Bigfoot people, you know, seeing Bigfoot encounters, nice. All kinds of stuff. I mean, there's just, you know, I really thought that it would be difficult to get people to come on and tell their stories. It's not. It's
actually people been, like, generally, yeah. If they, yeah. If it's out there, they generally like telling their story.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been great. So, I mean, if you follow me anywhere, you know, every once in a while I'll do like a casting call type situation. Hey, come on my show. You know, that's your open door to come on and tell your story. You can remain anonymous if you choose to, not forcing anybody. You can have complete, you know, confidentiality if you would like it. That's fine. So that's coming out next. And then after that runs is Searching for Strange, which is a show that is more geared towards internet mystery and mysteries that go viral on the internet.
Interesting. I can tell you're kind of like, do you watch a lot of ID Go or whatever, ID Discovery? That you know,
I have, but
no. Well, no, it's just because like each, you got kind of like, they're all like packaged in a certain way, like, where it's just like, you know what I mean? So sure. I can see the true criminess, the true crime fandom in you. Because like, it's always like, you know, mailmen who kill. It's like, what? I'm watching that show. That's season pass.
I'd call that Going Postal.
There you go. That would be it. Going Postal, Mailmen That Kill. And it'd be like this whole, you know, a whole series. But yeah, no, okay. So this new one is just Internet Mysteries.
Internet Mysteries. Some of the topics we have, I mean, and these are all recorded already. They're ready to go. Some of the topics we have are Alex from 4chan, which was somebody made a 4chan post with mysterious coordinates. A guy named Alex ghosts of these coordinates and disappears. We have, let's see, what else did we have? Oh, my gosh, we have a bunch. Momo, we talked about, like, the Momo phenomenon. I don't remember if you remember that or not.
Oh, yeah, that little face thing. Is it the face?
Yeah, the really creepy face. We talked about that.
Have you seen this man?
We did this man. Yeah, that's one of them. And then I think my favorite was the Hat Man cult and the people who take tons of Benadryl in order to try to see him. That is such a good episode.
I've never heard of that. Jesus.
I can't wait for that to come out. And the guy that hosts it with me, he's Eddie the Axe. He hosts the Bloody Bits horror podcast. He actually had a Hat Man experience. So, you kind of get a twofer in that one. It's a really good episode. Max Headroom, you know, we talk about Max Headroom. I mean, you know, it's going to be great. And these are
awesome. Yeah, I love all that.
These are just this is the first season. There's going to be so much more. And even though they're going to be different people each episode, they are going to be familiar each season. So.
And these on your Patreon, or are these just in general, anyone can get them?
No, anybody can get them. Of course, I do have a Patreon. You get them ad-free and you get them early over there. Gotcha. You know, that's the benefit. So, like, this man is already posted up. So people can, you know, listen to that. Because you're not going to hear that for a couple more months, right? The season's not ready to go yet. But you can hear it now over on my Patreon. So
you're going to get me to sign up because I love that story.
It's over there. It's a good one. It's spicy.
It's a cool story, yeah. Now, I hate to ask this question because I sort of like – I've heard this shit for years and years and years. But have you thought about writing a book? Because it seems like everybody in – you know, everybody – if you're in the paranormal, you have to have a book.
You got to. It's part of the rules. I'm in the process of writing one. So I have been for a while. Initially, it started off with this Mothman documentary. Well, spoiler alert, it's not done yet. And I can't promise everybody when it's going to be done. It's really hard to make a documentary on an ongoing investigation. And there are still some places I'd like to – like, I haven't been to Chicago. I have to go there. I have to investigate those sightings. And, you know, again, that costs – I didn't crowdfund this. I'm not small-town monsters. There's nobody giving me $100,000 to go do this stuff. It's coming out of my pocket, you know. So it's going to take a while. So I decided, well, in the meantime, let me go ahead and let's get my research together. Let's put it in a book. So there is going to be a book that's going to be – you don't need to have the book to enjoy the documentary or vice versa, but it is going to go kind of in tandem with those same topics. So it is in the works. I did not expect to go on a co-host search, so I was expecting it to be done a little sooner. And I also didn't expect to do three brand new podcasts either. So
yeah, you're very ambitious. I'm impressed.
I am working on it. Just hit, you know, we just recorded all those seasons of all those shows, and now I'm like, okay, now I can focus on the book for a while.
Yeah, that's intense.
I'm hoping to have it done by June. My advice, though, that I give to everybody is don't tell everybody when your projects are done until they're actually done.
Don't hold me to it,
but it's there. It's getting there. I've written a good chunk of it. I just gotta finish.
Yeah, it's tough. So I've never written a book. People have been on my ass about writing a book for, like I said, years. But it'll eventually come, and it'll be amazing. But
yeah.
I'm just like, you know what? No. Now it's almost a spite thing.
You got to sit down and just do it. And that's the hard part. I'll tell you, it's tough to just sit there and write in a way that people will enjoy reading it, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. All right. That's generally we start out with the bio background. So you got to write a book. What's next? We already did all this. What's next for you? I mean, we just heard all this. So
yeah.
Where can people find your stuff? Because you're all over social media. I envy you. I have Facebook and Twitter, and that's it. And I really don't even like either of those. But so where is there a hub that you can direct people to find out about all this stuff?
Not a hub necessarily. I can give you I have a master link I can give to you. But I'm everywhere. You know, search for On Wednesdays We Talk Weird, anywhere
there you go.
The podcast.
Yes. Go on Google and yeah.
It's the only thing that pops up. If you want to follow me directly, Ashley Hilt on Facebook. I'm the one with the red hair. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter at It's Ashers with a Z. And you can also find me. I give lectures. I'll be giving a lecture actually about Injured Cold at the Whitville UFO Festival. I believe that's June 8th, I think. First Saturday in June, I believe. So you can find me there.
Is that Whitville?
Whitville, Virginia. I'm sorry.
Virginia. All right. No, it's all right. I didn't know. All right. Whitville, Virginia. All right. So, all right. I think that's it. Well, it's been a lot of fun talking to you, Ashley. I really like that you have an appreciation for the more obscure stuff. That's what I really enjoyed looking through your archive. I was like, oh, shit, 20 feet tiles and furries and smiley face killer and all these sort of side subjects that oftentimes I'll see and be like, oh, that would be a good idea for a show. But then I kind of never really get around to it. And it's nice to see that there are shows out there that have covered this stuff, because it's like that those little ones are really weird chimp attacks, like I said.
Yeah.
oh, man. Yeah. I did a show on talking about true crime. I did a show back in the day just those cases where people are held captive for a super long time.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Oh, yeah. It's there's a guy who wrote a book on it. I don't have it off the top of my head, but yeah,
that's a good topic right there. I might take that one.
I'll dig up the episode and send it your way. But yeah, it was it was a hell of a show. So yeah, I feel sort of a kindred spirit here, because you're fellow fans of the strange and unusual and the really peripherally odd stuff. So I think I will have you back on the show again in the future.
I told you.
As you predicted.
I'm psychic, yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Well, it's been a lot of fun, and I'm going to be keeping up with all your projects, and I hope that all of the Ben All America listeners do too.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.